The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 350 of the Columbia Calling podcast. This week's very special guest is Kevin McCaffrey. He's been on the line from Cali, and he'll be detailing with great candor his experience, his dreadful experience just a few weeks ago when he was drugged and mugged under the influence of scopolamine. Scopolamine, to those of you who are unaware of what it is a real problem here in Colombia, but it can also be known as devil's breath and burundanga. And yes, you'll hear all about that in the third segment of this show. Last week's show, Arte Suma Paz with Rick Dragon, the artist, was very popular despite some serious competition on the airwaves. Apparently, there was an election going on. So Arte Suma Paz was widely downloaded and very well received, again, despite the heavy competition from elsewhere. I've souped up and rejigged the Patreon campaign to help the Columbia Calling podcast continue to grow and improve. And for those of you who've pledged $25 and upwards per month, you'll be receiving courtesy merchandise, Columbia Calling merchandise, in early 2021. And on that note, that's a very special thank you to Adam Nunn for his pledge. And yes, we'll be mentioning his company, Norteric, and this company will allow you to enter a new age of cybersecurity by developing and managing a comprehensive cybersecurity plan for your organization. You can prioritize and design your strategies and investments in real time, reducing risk, satisfying cybersecurity responsibility, and saving money. Learn more at norteric.com. That's norteric.com. Of course, we'll link that to the Facebook page as well and share it on Twitter so you can all get in touch with Adam about this. Now I'll leave you in the capable hands of Emily Hart, who'll bring you this week's newscast, and then we'll be back with Kevin McCaffrey in Cali talking about his pretty awful, terrible experience in Cartagena, Colombia, just a few weeks ago. So don't go away. Keep on listening and spread the word. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for the week of November 9th, 2020. Last week, a protest by former guerrilla arrived in Bogota to demand that the Colombian government act to stop the murder of former combatants. Nearly 240 have been killed since the signing of the peace agreement in 2016. President Iván Duque met with delegates of the group, as well as key government players in the peace process, with the aim of fighting stigma faced by former FARC guerrilla. This is seen as a positive and somewhat surprising step, as Duque and his government have been reticent in implementation of the peace process, so much so that a petition to remove Duque from government was launched last month, partly motivated by his failures to advance the peace process. It is additionally a surprising move, given Duque's extreme reluctance this month to meet with either the indigenous social protest or delegates of the national strike. FARC leaders and the government coordinator for the peace process, Emilio Archila, announced concrete measures to combat the violence. In less progressive news this week, a movement for major political reform was sunk in Congress, including a proposal to have a quota for 50% women and 50% men. The motion was put forward by a cross-party coalition, but was denied by 91 votes to 58. President Duque himself is now in Bolivia, meeting with the new leadership there, having reactivated his foreign policy agenda. During the pandemic, particularly during Colombia's lockdown and the near total shutdown of the informal economy, many Venezuelan migrants returned to Venezuela, some even subsidised by the Colombian state in their journey. Last week, the conditions on the border were revealed. At official entry points, many are kept in inhumane conditions, without adequate food or shelter, largely due to Venezuelan authorities' decision to limit entries per week into the country. Returnees described waiting for days, more than a week in some instances, on the Colombian side of the border. On the other side, reception centres are improvised, unsanitary and cramped, often holding arrivals for weeks. Due to these conditions, many are opting to cross the border at unofficial entry points, often having to pay extortionate fees to armed groups to do so. President Maduro referred to these illegal border crossers as bioterrorists. Hundreds are being prosecuted. Colombia's biggest weekly magazine, Semana, reported that Colombian guerrilla forces, including the ELN, have been recruited to help control the border with the Venezuelan army. Semana cites reports from US and European intelligence agencies, as well as the Venezuelan intelligence service. The magazine reports that the border agencies are even considering laying landmines to prevent border crossing through unofficial entry points. As the economy reopens on the Colombian side of the border, it is expected that many will cross back into Colombia, though there is currently no formal protocol to coordinate efforts to screen or quarantine returnees before and after crossing the border. Colombia has now registered nearly 33,000 deaths from coronavirus and well over a million cases. As Colombia moves towards a second infection peak, the president ruled out another lockdown, but Christmas is being brought forward as government policy. Christmas bonuses for government employees and pensioners will be handed out this month. Duque has encouraged private companies to do the same. As flights reopen, the requirements for a COVID-19 test are being removed, though those displaying symptoms will not be permitted to board planes, and all passengers will need to complete Colombia's track and trace form, check MIG, before flying. Bogotá's mayor, Claudia López, criticised this policy strongly, saying that to allow passengers to fly without having had a test was an unnecessary risk and a mistake. There is further discussion of imposing new visa requirements on a number of countries for non-essential trips. They include France, the Netherlands, Germany, Canada and Spain. That was the week's newscast. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back again. This is episode 350, and my very special guest, as I mentioned earlier, is Kevin McCaffrey. Kevin McCaffrey, he teaches at a private school in Cali. He's been down there for 11 years. He's been on the show twice before. Mainly we were talking about, I think the first time it was Ireland and Colombia and the peace process. And then we were discussing his music, because he's a singer-songwriter as well. And he just released a video and a track called Getting Out of Jail, which you can find on YouTube and so on and so forth. But we've got on the show for less positive reasons, and a lot of you out there have expressed an interest in this show because the story, well, it's quite impacting. And, Kevin was the victim of a scopolamine mugging, I suppose is what it is, but it's not really even a mugging. He was drugged and had a vast sum of money taken from his account in Cartagena on the Colombian coast. And I'm not the person to tell the story. So, Kevin, I'm glad you're healthy and I'm glad you're willing to talk to us here on the podcast.
Great, Richard. Thanks very much for having us again, as always.
It's a great pleasure to have you on, man. I wish it was under better, more positive circumstances than it is. But I think we can do something here and share your story and hopefully, prevent other people from falling into, I guess, is it a honeypot trap?
Yeah, I mean that's been, since this happened to me, Richard, that's always been objective number one. I made a conscious decision the day after this happened, and I realized that, what had happened, that I immediately just made a decision, I'm going to make this into a positive experience somehow. And I tried to work out, okay, how am I going to make this into a positive experience? Okay, so obviously on a personal level, there's certain things that I will have taken from the experience, of course. And then, but of course, getting my story out there and helping to create awareness and make sure that other people don't fall victim to the same thing that happened to me, basically, Richard. So, yeah, that's more or less
This is a good thing. This is what you're doing is a good thing. And a lot of people would be embarrassed. They'd feel, they wouldn't want to share it. And we don't hear about the majority of these cases because people do hide it and sort of bury it down. And I think being able to talk about it is a way of addressing perhaps the trauma as well. It's your own cathartic experience. But tell us, and this is what I know people will want to know, what exactly happened? So you went off for the Puente de Cartagena, and you were there with friends, and, well, continue.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. As you were saying at the start of the show, Richard, I'm a teacher. I work at a private school called Colegio Jefferson. I've been living in Cali for the last 11 years. I absolutely love this place. I'm so proud to call it my home. And I would be very happy to live another 11 years in Cali, despite everything that's happened. So anyway, I was traveling during recess week, which is basically midterm break. And I was just desperate to get to the beach. I really wanted to get to the beach. And one of my best friends, another guy from Ireland, he had already planned to travel there with his girlfriend. So he's like, well, why don't you join us? So I was like, yeah, why not? You know, go to Cartagena, get to the beach. My whole idea was I'm going to go there, bring my guitar, do some writing. I want to do some videos. I thought about this idea of doing an Instagram live on top of the city walls and everything. So I was trying to make it a sort of musical trip as well. And one of the things that I'd never done before, and I think even from that journey as well, is I think I want to do some more sort of travel blogs, talking about the amazing things around Colombia. You know, for most of the listeners, I'm sure they're familiar with Colombia. It's a totally stunning, unbelievable place to travel. You know, from the very, very top, you have San Andres, an incredible Caribbean island, right down to the bottom. You know, the Amazon, you know, so many, you know, in terms of nature, it's second probably only to Brazil, possibly Ecuador, Costa Rica in the world for wildlife. It's totally amazing. So anyway, yeah, I was traveling to Cartagena. And so the first couple of days, I was just there, you know, went to a couple of different beaches with a friend. On the second night, so it was Tuesday, the 6th of October, I was just having a drink with my friend, Sid, and about just after 9 o'clock, we got approached by a couple of girls. And the two girls started talking to us, you know, as you do, you know, just doing the normal thing. And whenever they were leaving, after about 2 or 3 minutes, this was just after 9 o'clock, as I say, then one of them said to me, it'd be nice, you know, would you like to do something while you're still here in Cartagena? How long are you going to be here for? And I said, well, I'm going to be here till Friday. My friend's going back to Cali. And then I was basically, you know, I gave her my number, and that's how we left it. My friends shortly after, and I probably 20 minutes after, we were staying in Boca Grande. So we just went back to the hotel pretty much after that. Yeah, so we must have got back, I would say, around 9:30, more or less. And then the next day then, so I got a message from the girl around lunchtime. I was at the beach again. I was in La Boquilla. I'd just done a couple of cool videos, you know, me recording, singing some songs on the beach or whatever. And I was just having lunch and started chatting on WhatsApp. Things seemed to be going really well, getting to know each other. And then so we had arranged to meet later on that night. Now, I'd been to Cartagena before 5 times, so I know the city pretty well. At this stage, I was then in Getsemani. But because obviously it's someone that I don't know, right, I said, okay, well, it's better that I'll meet. I said to her, let's meet at my hotel. I was then in Getsemani, a place called Casa Lopez. I said, you know, let's meet there. We'll have some food. And then, you know, from there, we'll, you know, take a walk around the city. So whenever the girl gets to the hotel, so just after 6 p.m., she only had her contraseña, which for anyone that is not really familiar with that term, it's almost like your provisional ID. So well, say whenever you lose your ID, it's almost like you're waiting for the official one to be replaced. So they wouldn't let her in because I guess, you know, we're in very strict. It was the first week basically post lockdown restrictions in Cartagena, so they've been very strict with identification. Normally, the contraseña is a normal valid form of ID, but in this case, they said no. Only with your official cell, I'm going to allow you in. So I said, look, don't worry about it. Let's go and we'll find somewhere to eat around the historic center. So we walked from the historic center just after 6 o'clock then. And so before we get to the historic center, we did what I've done many times before. As I said, I've been there with family, friends, I've been there by myself. We were out basically one of the most open air touristy parts of the city is just by the clock. So we sat down and we're sitting on one of the benches just started chatting. We, you know, we asked for a drink from one of the vendors. We were talking about that's about 5 or 10 minutes, you know. And then, so yeah, things are going really well. As I say, just getting to know each other, you know, just what we would normally do. And then after about the 10 minutes, then she said, I recognize one of my friends over there. Do you mind if she comes and says hello? And I said, not at all. I mean, no problem if your friend wants to come and say hello. So her friend came and sat down. So the three of us are sitting on the bench. And it can't have been more than about 5 minutes, between 3 and 5 minutes. And I would say this would have been about 6:30 or 6:40 p.m. Now we're talking. And that's literally the last thing I remember. You're totally, total blank. The next thing I remember, I am in a taxi, totally disorientated, sort of nauseous, dizzy. This is the stage whenever I sort of start regaining my memory. I just remember being in a taxi. I remember getting back to the hotel. The taxi driver was saying, look, so the taxi driver himself is, I think, probably a bit worried, a bit sort of agitated. He said, look, this guy's been drugged. He doesn't know where he is. Luckily, you know, we finally found a hotel after such a long time. But basically, we've been going around for whatever, how long. He needs to pay me. So this is whenever I start to sort of come around a little bit. And luckily, I had a little bit of cash still in my room. So I went upstairs, took down the money, paid the taxi driver. The people in the taxi were sort of helping to sort of, you know, calm the situation. It was pretty much calm, but the guy just wanted to be paid, basically. I think he was worried about the whole situation, just making sure that I got home safe. So the taxi driver left, and then, you know, in this sort of quite gingerly drugged up state from the effects of this scopolamina, the scopolamine, and I basically fell asleep. So the next morning I woke up and sort of started coming around. It was still only about 7:30 in the morning, so it's still quite, sort of quite a bit groggy, again, from the effects of the drug or whatever. Still a bit dizzy, but, you know, start coming around again, a bit more clearly. Check for my possessions, realize that I don't have a phone. I actually had my wallet, incredibly, but only had my cedula, my ID card. So my bank card was missing, and the little cash, I only took out about 150,000 pesos, so it was a lot of money. So obviously I realized that I'd been robbed straight away, obviously. So I went down to the reception and basically explained to them what happened. The hotel were absolutely fantastic that whole day. They were amazing because there was no communal area, and, you know, they lent me their computer to do all of this because obviously I didn't have my phone. So immediately got onto my online account. Of course, for legal reasons, I can't name the bank that is involved in this crime. But yes, I got onto my online banking and realized that there had been a lot of strange transactions. At that point, I actually, you know, just, I guess, you know, I wasn't totally totally focused, I guess, because I was still quite sleepy and everything. I thought that I had 41 million pesos in my account. So I thought that at that stage, I'd been robbed of around 20 million pesos. So around $5,000, which is a big hit. But obviously, I just sort of said, look, you're all right. Now this happened. You're okay. It's been, I just try, you know, I just knew that I had a lot of things to do that day. So let's just stay calm. Let's stay positive. So immediately I called the bank, made the report, and cancelled my card. So luckily I didn't go out with my credit card. I had my credit card in my hotel room, and that really saved me because obviously I had nothing else there. No, my friend had already gone back to Cali, so I would have been totally stranded. But I had my credit card luckily, and so first thing I did, I went and bought a new phone in the city centre, and then went to the bank. So I went to the bank, and I just could not believe the bank from the first minute until now. It had been absolutely disgusting, disgraceful, their treatment of me. They just totally washed their hands of the situation from the first minute. There was all I wanted at that particular moment would have been just someone to simply say, look, sir, we're so sorry what happened. We can't guarantee we're going to be able to get your money back. But, you know, we're going to investigate. You know, we have our support. Is there anything we can do? Just the most basic form of customer service. No. As soon as they went in and said, oh, well, yeah, did you do the thing on over the phone? I was like, yeah. Well, there's nothing else we can really do. And that was really it. He's like, if you use your card, if someone else used your card, you're totally responsible for your card. There's nothing else we can do here. And that's literally, that's all they were saying. And no way were they sort of saying, we're sorry about what happened. You know, we'll get to the bottom of this. So after, you know, a few minutes of being there, I said, okay, well, can you please give me a list of all of the transactions that were made on the 7th of October, Wednesday the 7th of October, because I didn't make any of these transactions. And in the meantime, yeah, they had agreed to give me a replacement card. So we got the replacement card, saw the transactions, and then I also said, can you please confirm to me on your screen what my balance is? And at this point, she told me, sir, you have 41,000 pesos. So from going at that, I'm actually thinking at 41 million, at 41,000. So for people just to sort of translate that into dollars, so I thought of $10,000 in my account, I had $10 in my account. So that was the only moment. That was the only moment in these last 4 weeks, just over 4 weeks, where I would say there was a bit of sort of desperation, head in hand, just like, oh, I just couldn't, because it's like everything's gone. It was like 10 years of my savings as a teacher, just gone like that. It was just a realization, but it was also in that same moment and that day, that very day, I said to myself, right, this, I'm going to make this into a positive situation, a positive experience in my life. I am not going to let it, I'm not going to let it get me down. I'm not going to sort of get into the what could have been. From that moment, I said, how am I going to make this into a positive situation? So that it was almost the most defining moment of the whole thing in terms of where I am now mentally and how I've been able to sort of manage it. But anyway, so from there, I saw the 17 transactions. I just could not believe these transactions. So there were 17 different transactions done with my card in just over 2 hours. The first ones were just electronically, from the ATM, where they took a few million pesos, nothing too strange. And to be honest, there's not really much a bank can do there. But the vast majority of these transactions took place between the hours of 9:53 to 10:21 p.m. So initially, in this restaurant, 7 different transactions, almost 48 million pesos. And the transactions were like 9 million pesos, 6 million pesos, 8 million pesos, another 9. So 7 transactions in 8 minutes, almost 50 million pesos. And there was no red flag, there was no security. Obviously, this is totally absurd that this amount couldn't go out of your account. They're just like that. And then around that was 17 minutes after then, there was one final big, big transaction in a drugstore. Almost 6 million pesos, 5.8 million pesos in a drugstore. Now, I was even, as a joke, saying to the people, I was like, Cristiano Ronaldo wouldn't spend, $10,000 in 8 minutes in a restaurant. Well, what can you spend the money on? I was just like, could not believe it. So I spoke to speaking to the bank manager, and again, she was totally just washing her hands. Yeah. She says, there's nothing we can do. You've made the report. It's nothing. So I just could not believe it, Richard. It was totally unbelievable. And then from there, an even bigger joke was the police. It was an absolute, I could not believe how the police behaved. That was it. If the bank was a tough experience just to take on the chin, the police was, probably double. Because, you think you depend on the police, or you should, any society should, because they're your protectors. So I went to the bank. No, sorry, I went to, after the bank, I went to the police. So now at least I had the list of the transactions. I had the details of the person who I had met. Literally, they had her on camera from the hotel where I was staying. So I went there with all this information. After probably 10 or 15 minutes, this showed me a picture on a phone. And they said, is this the woman? Is this the girl that you met on the Tuesday, or the girl that you were with yesterday? And I said, yeah, that's her. It was a picture of her in a face mask with two other women. So the fact that, and in handcuffs. So the fact that they were in handcuffs with the face mask shows that that was even done recently, and they just totally got away with it. One of the police officers laughed at me. That's out of all the experience, that's the thing that actually stands out with me most, the guy that laughed. So I sat down there. I must have been there for about another hour. I assumed that all of this information, they literally had all of the evidence in their hands. They knew who it was. They knew, the position that the 17 transactions were that had been made. They had the girl, the image on camera in the hotel where I was staying. They literally had it all there. So I assumed, I guess now, silly me for assuming, I assumed that they were sort of, developing the case. There was literally about 10 or 12 police officers. I thought that, they were getting the case together. We were going to go and investigate. That's what the police normally does. And so I asked after about an hour, and I said, so, where are we at? What's the situation? Like, oh, no, we can't do anything here. You have to go to the Fiscalía. And I was like, but you can't do anything? He's like, no, that's a Fiscalía. I give you a Fiscalía. But I was like, yeah, you literally have the evidence in your hands. You know, it's there. Like, you know who the person is. Now, obviously, I know there are many, many other people involved in this crime, but at least there's one person. So, no, again, the police, that was a joke, so I just had to do the denuncia or the report online. So the Fiscalía, for anyone that doesn't really know what the Fiscalía is here in Colombia, it's basically a separate independent branch of the government where you make sort of criminal reports that is separate from the police. But it's still incredible that the police can't do anything. Mm. And this was a police station that was like three blocks from the incident as well. It's just, you know, totally mind-blowing. So anyway, that was my experience in Cartagena. Went back to Cali the next day. So I thought it was important to tell my story to the school where I work, and the school have been absolutely fantastic as well. Their support has been really, really key in all of this. So I got a response back from the bank finally. I got this letter, the formal letter from the bank saying, "Dear Mr. McCaffrey," so this was the person put in charge of my case. I investigated your case, and we can clearly see that you did not make these transactions, that you were a victim of fraud and a victim of this crime. However, based on the conditions of your account, we are unwilling to give any compensation or support. That's literally what the letter said. Now, for anyone who doesn't know anything about a scopolamina, I guess now's the time to bring that to light. Whenever you're given a scopolamina, it acts immediately. It's a crazy, crazy drug. So it acts within minutes. Exactly like happened to me, you black out, so you can never remember anything. But when you're under the influence of a scopolamina, you will literally do anything that anyone tells you. It's like you're hypnotized. So there was always that in the back of my mind thinking, you know what? Because after this happened, I investigated a lot about a scopolamina and I heard similar cases. And I was thinking, what if I actually was the one making transactions? But no, clearly the bank investigated and they're actually telling me that, you know, I didn't make the transactions, but there's nothing I'm going to do. You know, basically that's what their response was. So I'm currently in a legal, I'm trying to sort of reach a negotiation through the school. The school are trying to mediate. I talked to three different lawyers, one of which was recommended by the UK embassy. And this is the lawyer that I would be going with. Mm. However, he said there's two different instances, three scenarios, let's say. He said there's an out-of-court agreement or an out-of-court settlement that you send the letter, a formal letter, and they have to arrange, they have to meet you basically within 3 to 4 weeks maximum. There was you sort of try and maybe reach an agreement or something. Possibly they might offer you something or nothing of the money back. If they agree to say, if I don't agree or they're not going to offer anything, then of course it would be a longer legal case and that's going to take up to at least a year. But that would be a much, much bigger case. Mm. So the lawyer said to me, he has bank contacts in the bank, in said bank that I can't say for now anyway, that he said that the likelihood of you getting anything out of court is very, very minimal. It's going to be likely that we're here for the long case, basically. He said, "What your best option is to go through, use the school. Possibly they might be able to mediate, because banks don't listen to just one person. If you're going through a particular institution or a school, in this case, you know they might be able to help." I'm not holding my breath. I am ready for this. If it's going to go for the long haul, Richard, I'm totally ready for that scenario. Because I just don't see how, in any sort of normal ethical situation, any normal ethical court, my defense is so easy. Mm. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I'll just simply say, look, okay, I understand this crazy contract you have where basically clients have no rights. Literally, guys, everyone's listening here, be very, very, very careful here in Colombia. You basically don't have any rights with a normal current account. If you have a credit card, it's different because it's international. But be very, very, very careful, because literally this contract absolves the bank of all responsibility. Unfortunately, that is the situation. So literally someone could take you to, you know, hold you at gunpoint, take you to the bank, you give them all your money, and, you know, the bank wouldn't do anything. Mm. These are absolutely crazy, crazy laws that have to change. It's absolutely obscene. So I have to accept that this totally absurd contract. Now I learn how the banks are here in Colombia. However, my case is a civil case against the bank where, okay, you might say I'm responsible for my card. Okay, I have to accept that because of this ridiculous contract. However, your idea is to, you know, you have to protect my money. That's your job as a bank. That's your number one job as a bank, is to protect my money. You didn't. You allowed almost 55 million pesos to go out of my account in less than 30 minutes in 8 different transactions. You even sent me a letter back saying that I didn't make the transactions. That's my defense. My defense is going to be so easy. I just can't. The only way is possibly, if, as I say, if it was a normal situation, a normal case in a normal court, there's no way, you know, I couldn't, you know, how I could lose that defense. And that's basically where I'm at right now. I'm trying to, for the reasons, I'm going to try and give the bank the chance to do the right thing, because I'm also an ethical person, a moral person as well. So if the bank does the right thing, I'm not going to go public with everything. Because, you know, if they recognize their error and you know, and atone for that, for me, that will be enough. I'll more focus on trying to create awareness of the situations in a more general sense and not have to name the bank. But of course, if they're going to say to me, we're not going to offer anything, I'm totally ready to share everything, share the letter, all the transactions. And not only this, you know, I find out that they're actually, all of these bank charges in the last month, I just got my statement for the last month. They're charging me this cuatro por mil. That's 4 times 1,000. For, if you don't live in Colombia, you probably won't have an idea of the concept. But normally, if you have other accounts, for any transaction, they're going to charge you. Again, another totally ridiculous law that we have in this country. But I don't have any other accounts. And so they've actually taken almost 200,000 pesos from my account, the bank, in 8 different transactions. So to add insult to injury, because I guess, because, you know, I was asking, you know, could it be, I was asking someone at school, is it possibly to do with the fact that how much money was taken out of that particular incident? It could be, but we don't know yet. So not only did they not protect all of my life savings, basically, or, you know, savings of living in Cali, but they're also charging me, to add insult to injury. So it's an absolutely incredible situation. That's really where I'm at right now with the whole case. But as I say, and when since I've been sharing the story, I made that conscious decision that I'm going to make a positive situation about this. And that's what, you know, that's the response. By, I simply have just shared the story on YouTube, on Facebook, and the response has been totally, totally unbelievable. A lot of people have had the courage to come forward themselves and share their stories. They said, thank you. I never had the chance to come forward. I want to share my story here now publicly. So, because I was encouraging people to do that. Some of the stories that I have heard have been really, really, really horrific. And we're talking about people of all age groups, you know, young people, older people, men, women, mostly Colombians. A lot of people have this sort of stereotype. It only happens to stupid foreigners. This is totally, could be farther from the truth. I read this article for a Medellin Guru, I think it's called, that it is estimated by the U.S. State Department, I think it's called, that there are 50,000 cases of escopolamina or scopolamine every year in Colombia. And the vast, vast majority of these cases are Colombians. And pretty much the only thing that it's used for is to commit crimes of what happened to me, crimes of fraud and rape. Literally, a pharmaceutical company could not create the most perfect drug for crime due to the properties that I had no idea before it happened to me. You know, you just think, oh, it's never going to happen to me. But now I've learned a lot about the drug. It's just, you know, it acts on me almost immediately. Within a few minutes, you know, you totally black out for, you know, say around 5 to 6 hours. So that's why it's very, very difficult for you to do the report. And it doesn't stay in your system. It says 9 to 12 hours in your system as well. So it's really, really, really hard to bring these crimes to justice. And that's why, number one, people are never arrested or they're coming to light the stories. And then number two, yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people suffer much more traumatizing stories than mine was. Luckily, physically or mentally, I'm strong, or stronger even from the incident. People die from scopolamine. People end up in comas. People don't recover from the negative you know, from the trauma. So it can be such a traumatic experience. People, just to give a couple of the dozens and dozens of stories that people have been sharing with me. A friend of mine said that another teacher actually went missing for 3 months, and found him just walking around a building site, didn't know where he was, no shoes on. Other stories about people I didn't even know as well. There was three of my friends who only came out and told me after, this happened to me. I couldn't believe it. It happened to you as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so most people don't want to share the story. But the reason why I felt compelled to do it, and as I say, I was inspired by, there's a couple of friends in particular, I was really, you know, do I really want to do this? Do I want to bring sort of heat on myself, or, you know, do I want the tension? But then they said, look, if you really share your story, there is definitely, it's going to help people. Mm. If you're willing to do it, it will be positive. So whenever I, go back to that moment in the bank, that moment I realized, how am I going to make this into a positive? This was one of the things that I've, you know, been very, very focused about doing, is creating awareness. And as I said, the response has been totally amazing. Very, very supportive. People sharing their stories. And it's a really hard thing to stop the stroke happening because of its properties. But by creating awareness, hopefully by doing that, it can happen to less and less people. And of course, telling people to be very careful with their banks and their accounts here, et cetera, because, you know, basically we don't have any rights. And hopefully, who knows, by my case, things might change. You just never ever know.
Well, all I can say is, at this point, I'm immensely relieved that you're well and you're taking this so well. You're in good health, because I had read as well prior to this conversation that people can suffer from heart failures and so on from too much scopolamine. I mean, you know, anything could happen. But I'd like to explore in over the next few minutes or so is the experience itself. Let's think that the friend came over when you were sitting on the bench, you know, there in the Torre del Loch, whatever it's called there. A friend came over, and, you know, have you kind of identified the moment that it could have happened? I mean, she could have slipped you something, she could have blown a cigarette. I don't know. I mean,
no, this is the thing, you know, that's the one thing that I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really don't know. I honestly don't know how it would have happened, but I know who would have been involved, probably the girl, her friend, maybe both of them, possibly the street vendor.
Yeah.
How it was done, there are various ways this can be done, administered in a drink, can be blown at you, even just through the pores in your skin even. Yeah. It's crazy.
So, I mean,
I don't remember wherever there was a moment before. It's like, I know that I've been drug running. No.
Yeah.
I just remember that was the last clear moment.
Wow. So, I mean, the vendor could have put, you know, a residue on the can. Perhaps.
Who knows, man? Yeah. Who knows?
Crazy. Then my it's just so weird to imagine and how fast it acts. And I'm just thinking, you know, so you were in this taxi, obviously sort of lolling around in the back of the taxi. Where did the taxi pick you up?
I have no idea. That I would love to have been a fly on the wall, or just to be able to see what I did for those next number of hours. I honestly have no idea.
Wow, because that would be something as well, to know where you were.
Exactly. You know, try and retrace the steps. Obviously, that would help. But again, this is the big, big problem with scopolamine. It's, you just lose total memory of everything. And, you know, whenever you try and write a report, you can't retrace your steps.
Yeah. And so we need to clarify straight up, you know, you're a single guy, you have no, let's say, significant others or anything. You know, a girl comes over and chats to you, you're going to chat back. You're an educated guy, polite, and hey, you're on holiday. It's not as if you were out there, you know, looking for the biggest rumba, and you're not sort of like in Parque Lleras in Medellin or anything like that. You're just enjoying a drink with friends, and a girl came over to chat. I would say we've probably all been out on a date with girls that we don't know very well. You are truly the victim in this one. And then to go through that, and then to go, the thing, I hate the banks here. I hate, I can't say a lot positive about banks anywhere, but I particularly hate the banks here. I'm not going to mention any of them. Anyone who knows me knows my issues with them. But to go to the police and then have one laugh at you, and having shown you the photo of that lady, what an indignity to face up to in this moment where your head is clearly swimming and you've got a billion things going around in it. What is going on? What have I done? What has been done to me? And as a policeman who laughs, I would probably come to blows with the guy. I couldn't abide with that kind of thing. That's, to me, there's just no understanding. Yeah, it was your fault in their eyes, I guess.
Well, this is the thing, Richard. Going back to what you were saying initially, yeah, I mean, it's not the first time I've gone out with a girl I don't know. You know, it's happened numerous times. Hmm. I was in a totally public place in the middle of the day. Do you know what I mean? It's not as if I would have been in different situations, because it's very common, for example, this to happen in a disco late at night or something. Yeah. That's another common. So be careful always with your drinks and stuff like that. For all my investigation, that is a common thing, how people use a scopolamina and sort of discoteca. So be careful. Never leave your drinks unattended, things like that. So it's not as if I was in that sort of situation where I was, where I was a sitting duck, basically. I wasn't. I mean, I just, as I say, it seemed like the total... I felt safe. There was no point, because I'm a very experienced traveler. I'm very fortunate to say that. Travel all around Colombia. Absolutely love this place. Please don't let my experience put anyone off by any means. It is the most amazing country that I've been to outside of Ireland. And, I love this place with all of my heart, and I can see myself living here for many, many more years. So I am well traveled. I know Colombia, but one thing I don't like here, there's a phrase that people use here is "vista papaya," and that it's almost like people here just think it's your fault. Now, as I said, 95% of people has been totally, totally positive and sharing stories and being thankful. There are, of course, a few people like that. It's almost it's your fault. But as I say, I don't feel like poor me or the victim of the sort of a shoulder to cry on. No, I'm going to use this in so many ways. As I say, I'm going to use it in my music. I've already started writing. I think I'm going to create a blog with the people that have shared their stories. I've created a really big network of people who have actually been a victim of this. There's even a Facebook group, I had no idea, called Scopolamine Victims Colombia. People have been, there's media from Ireland got heard about the story. Someone, a guy in Atlanta wants to do a podcast as well. Hmm. The response has been totally, local newspapers, the Cubo, El País, and everything. So it's a story that touches people's heart, because almost everyone knows someone or has at least heard of someone that has been a victim of scopolamina. The only thing that we can do, because of the property is so difficult to bring these people to justice, the only thing we can do is create awareness and try and spread the word and be careful and blah blah blah, particularly going to Cartagena. That's the idea through this. As you say, Richard, I wake up literally every single day. I've woken up every single day since that accident, incident, and knowing that things could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
And this experience has made me a much more thankful person, much more positive person. And as I say, it's a 60 million peso investment I probably would have preferred to have avoided. But nevertheless, it's a 60 million peso investment that I'm going to learn so much from this experience and help other people in the process, I hope.
It's kind of incredible your reaction and your candor towards this, and so I can only salute you for that. I'm curious, because the bank is denying or reject everything. They did the investigation, so they obviously got the cameras from the ATMs and saw.
They must have. And the funny thing is, I actually sent them an email this week saying, "Okay, so firstly, I disagree with the response that you have given me. Could you tell me then, if I didn't make the transactions, who did and how?" Yeah. please respond to this email, and they haven't responded yet, of course.
And then the other thing is, you know, I have a Spotify account pegged to my, you know, my Columbia debit card or whatever, and it gets blocked. And this is like $6. It gets blocked every time that goes through. Absolutely every
Literally,
time.
Other people have told me exactly the same. Yeah. You know, the banks will call me if I try and make a purchase in Falabella or try to, you know, book something online. It's happened to me as well. I'm actually thinking I'm going to do a funny documentary down the line to see if I can take out this much money in the time frame that happened to me. Because that's totally impossible. And the lawyers have told me, anyone that works in banks have told me, that this is clearly, absolutely clearly an organized crime where the bank is involved.
Yeah.
There's no other way. So this is an organized crime. Just people have an idea where I mentioned, again, I can't mention the names, but a restaurant, so a local business, drugstores. There were three different drugstores. The bank, who it seems, again, I can't say 100%, but it looks very, very, very likely, and it's the opinion of everyone, the bank is involved. The fact that the police have done nothing, and the Fiscalía, after 4 weeks, have told me there's no advances in the case, and they've got all this evidence. They're, you know, it just seems that there's a massive criminal ring going on in Cartagena, and I would say if we dig deeper, it's happening all around the country, and if we dig even further, we will show that there's a lot of examples of fraud happening with banks who are involved as well. That's for another podcast. That one.
Someone, somewhere, permitted for these transactions to go through, and also someone, somewhere, knew which entities would accept expenditures of that amount. That's the thing as well. It's like, you know, expenditures to get that money out. Where's the trace of the, well, actually they took your phone, so there's no register, I guess, of the phone calls coming through and what have you. But people know what's going on. People know, you know, there are people on the street who know who's involved in these things. They know the picture. You arrest someone, you take their address or some sort of an address, and you take down their cellular number, and they still can't trace the lady who is, you know, we presume is behind this, the, you know, the first figure in this, in the chain of events that happened. You're thinking maybe the vendor, the lady, her friend, the pharmacy, the restaurant, maybe a taxi driver, the police, as you say. There are too many people looking the other way. Somebody else knows about this. That's the truth of it.
Yeah, that's the story, Richard. You know, if it was just you know, someone got drugged and got robbed of their money, that's not a story, really. No. It happens every day, every part of the world. It's because I was drugged and I was involved in an organized crime, you know, involving all these different entities. That's the story. That's the story, and how that amount of money was able to come out of my account in such a short period of time.
It's horrific, isn't it? It's horrific. Well, you've said your piece, and we've got the message out there to my listeners who have expressed an interest in this, definitely, because we've all heard about it, but never heard it, I don't think, firsthand from somebody. And so frank and so positive as yourself. And I genuinely hope that you don't suffer trauma down the line. You say it's made you a more positive and a more resilient person. You know, long may that last, because, you know, some people could come out of this totally destroyed and totally devoured by a bitterness and a degree of, I would say that some people will become incredibly closed off. You almost become a hermit. You know, the fear looking over your shoulder at every moment, I think that could definitely affect you. So I reiterate, I'm happy to see you here, you know, on the screen. You look healthy. You're speaking openly. You want to share this. You want it to be a story that others can learn from and hopefully protect others. Excellent. I mean, I can't say how much I admire you for this, and thank you for getting in touch and asking to tell your story here on the podcast.
Thanks very much, Richard, and, you know, giving me the opportunity. As I say, if I can help, you know, even help one person, it was always going to be worth it. But I know, because of the response has been totally amazing. It's already helped a lot of people, and I think people will be very, very careful and vigilant. Number one, in terms of, you know, mentioned about the banks and all of the, you know, these lack of protection that we have, and also as well, you know, going to Cartagena, be very, very, very careful.
Well, you heard it here, direct from the victim, Kevin McCaffrey himself, but he's come out on the other side very realistic about the possibilities of getting the money back, and realistic about what's going to happen down the line, but help, you know, out there trying to help others. Well, Kevin, all I can say is thank you for your time and thank you for sharing this. And I hope that the next time that we talk here on the podcast, it'll be under more favorable conditions. And of course, we'll be discussing, you know, maybe this comedic documentary that you make about about trying to take out that much money or spend on 25 bottles of Cristal in downtown Cartagena or something, or you know, about your music. Indeed, again, that would be far more, I think, enjoyable. But what we've done is hopefully a public service here. So I'm going to say farewell to Kevin, and I know that all of you out there listening will be wishing him all the best, and of course, you know, your heartfelt sympathies with the situation that has been undertaken here. So I've been Richard McCall talking to Kevin McCaffrey here in on the Columbia Calling podcast, episode 350. As with always, stay safe out there. Be careful. Do not leave your drinks unattended, you know, especially in Cartagena, as Kevin vouches for. But also, the virus has not gone away. It's disproportionately now affecting the countryside. So I want you all to remember that. And, of course, you know, isolate. Don't become a hermit. But be aware of your surroundings and be aware of what's going on. Because, after all, we have to look out for ourselves, but more than anything, one another and the people around us. So thank you again for listening. This has been episode 350 of the Columbia Calling podcast. I know you've enjoyed it. Feel free to write in and let us know what you think. All right. Bye-bye.